Hi, this is Mark Cuniberti. You're about to listen to another edition of our award-winning economic show entitled Money Matters. The information given on this show is obtained from a variety of public sources and is deemed accurate at time of airing but is not guaranteed. This show is pre-recorded at an earlier date, so market indices and related stock market references may not be accurate at time of airing, and we will not be taking any listener call-ins. Thanks again for listening. Now enjoy the show.
And welcome. My name is Mark Cuniberti. Welcome to the 237th edition of Money Matters. Today's job title is Inflation. Before we begin, please be advised that discussions in this show should not be construed as specific recommendations or investment advice. Always consult with your investment professional before making important investment decisions. I am an investment advisor representative through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. The views expressed on the show are my opinions only and those of the authors or guests I might read or have on the air. They do not necessarily reflect those of Cambridge, this station, its staff, members, or underwriters. Money Matters is about money, as money does matter, and the matters of money affect us all in some way or another, whether you have a lot of it, a little of it, or none of it. Controls our economy, our country, our planet in some way or another, controls the very way we live our lives. It's about your money, your lack of it, or abundance of it. It's about our lives and livelihood. In short, Money Matters is about you. How's everybody doing today? And, yeah, the Dow has been hopping around, hasn't it? It's up 205 today at 18,239.88. The show is rebroadcast at different times, so this indice reading is accurate as of Thursday, September 15, 2016, in the year of our Lord at 12:11 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. So, yeah, we're going to talk about inflation for sure. Market has you confused? Question mark? Up 205 today. A couple of weeks ago, it was running around 18,600, and now 18,239. Opened this market around what this morning? 18,030, somewhere in there. Hopping around like a ping pong ball, isn't it? Yeah. As I mentioned before in previous shows, 18,000 is a major level, like 17,000 and 16,000 and 19,000, and those major numbers can be areas of support or resistance. So, for instance, at 18,239, 18,000 is known as a support, as a support level. So, to pop down through 18,000 is kind of a support level. Some theorists observe, and if it was headed toward 19,000, that would be resistance. These bigger numbers. There's also technical resistance points that are read by chartists, people who read charts. But we can safely say that 18,000 might be a resistance point, support level. And the major number, 19,000, would be resistance. So it hasn't broken down below 18,000 yet and is up again today. So go figure, right? Crazy market movements in the last week and a half or so. I think the whole thing possibly hinges on whether the Federal Reserve will raise rates or what they will say in the coming days, or due to put out some minutes and make another observation and prognostication and everything else. So we shall see, shall we? So again, my name is Mark Cuniberti. Thanks for joining me. And we'll start out this today to read, we've covered in previous, 2 weeks ago, we covered the negative interest rate cycle, so we might talk a little bit about more of that. And we've also talked about, you know, the massive debt that the U.S. government possesses. And when the Federal Reserve manipulates interest rates, you know, they either raise them or lower them, then that, you know, causes a movement on the economy, or so it is thought. So we'll talk about negative rates a little bit. We've talked about that before, but I keep getting questions on it. Negative yield is what it's called, also known as negative interest rates. So what are these negative interest rates? Why are they important? Why do we look at them? They have been, you know, all the rage on the world economic stage the last couple of years. There's $10 trillion worth of sovereign bonds, which are, you know, IOUs from major governments. But there's $10 trillion worth of those sovereign bonds. A U.S. Treasury would be a sovereign bond that are yielding less than zero. That's out from Bloomberg News. A negative yield is a difficult concept to grasp by the average investor. And I know because I keep getting questions on it, even though I've covered it many times. So we'll cover it again. Negative yields, you know, when you loan money out, you normally see an interest rate. That's a positive yield. We loan somebody $100 and they pay a dollar in interest on top of the $100. That's a yield, a positive yield. And so zero yield would be you loan somebody $100. They give you $100 back later on and you get nothing. You get your $100 back, but you get no interest. Negative yield means you get back less than what you loaned out. So the obvious question is people say, huh, why would you do that? Well, normally the average investor, the mom and pop investor, doesn't do that. We don't know anywhere where we can go and get negative yield. But how negative yield affects large money players is a whole lot different. You know, a large money player like a hedge fund, they can't go to your traditional retail bank and deposit, you know, $100 million into a savings account because the retail banks offer a federally insured $250,000 limit. So they might put in $100 million into a bank, but if the bank becomes insolvent, technically they could lose their money. And so what do? When they have sell a lot of securities or they have a lot of money, they got to park it somewhere. And they just don't keep it in a stack in their basement. So they park it in generally what is regarded as the safest investments in the world so they don't lose that massive amount of money. And those are these sovereign bonds. These are IOUs from governments, IOUs from the United States or from France or wherever. Because the thinking is that a government of France or United States can't go broke. They can always print money or get other governments to help them out. I mean, when's the last time we saw a government go broke? Well, we've had the governments threaten to go broke, like Greece and Puerto Rico and others, but we haven't seen it, a complete default in a number of years. Japan and France are leading the way in issuing negative yield bonds. Japan is offering a 20-year bond, and France is offering a 9-year bond, and they have negative yield, so you can loan your money to Japan for 20 years and get back less than you loaned. So the U.S. hasn't offered negative yield on its bonds, but many countries in Europe have. Obviously evident by the $10 trillion figure that Bloomberg put out. So why would they do that? Why would anybody loan these sovereign governments money and get back less than they loaned out? Well, it's because they can't put their money in anything insured. They have to put it somewhere. And so they figure, well, if the best I can do to park $100 million is to lose a 0.01% when I do it, that's better than parking it somewhere where I could lose more. So it's the lesser of two evils, I guess you could say. These governments, sovereign bonds, are considered one of the safest investments in the world, as I had mentioned. And it's rare, especially in the last couple of years, that a government can go broke. I can't imagine the U.S. government would go broke, but there are those that say that that is possible. I guess anything is possible, right? So we look at the interest rates, which today are at historic lows, as you know, and the demand for places to park large amounts of money has skyrocketed because the governments of the world have created so much money to bail out countries or to bail out economies or in stimulus. There's so much money that has been created from air. It's floating around, and obviously a lot of that is in cash at one point or another, and they have to park it somewhere. So with everybody wanting to park money, the governments have found that they can not only offer no interest for the safety of investing in a sovereign bond, but they can actually go negative. They can actually say, well, if you really want to buy our bond, we have so much demand for it, we're going to take 0.1% if you do it. And so many governments have found themselves able to borrow money at the favorable rates that negative interest rates yield. After all, if you borrow $100 million, you pay back a little bit less than what you owe. The more you borrow, the more money you make, really. So when you see negative interest rates exist, it actually spurs on more borrowing from the governments because they actually make money on the deal. So it's kind of a round and round we go thing, you know. We drop interest rates so low is that we can borrow more. And since we are in control of interest rates and demand for all these bonds is high, we don't have to offer more than a negative yield. We can screw you out a little bit of money and you'll still come to us because you have so much money you got to park somewhere. So interest rates are at historic lows in many parts of the world, and demand for safe havens like sovereign debt is off the charts. What better way to make money or to borrow money and make money for a sovereign government than to pay back less than what you owed? In essence, you make money on the deal. The more you borrow, the more money you make. So I would sum it up by saying, what a crazy world we live in where borrowers not only have to pay zero interest rate, and they don't have to pay anything to borrow, they get to pay back less than what they were loaned. And in my opinion, it's because of all the copious amounts of money that central bankers have printed up to try to save the economies and the governments of the world. That money is now sloshing, and literally sloshing around the globe looking for a home. And in many cases, it finds its way right back into the IOUs of those that needed it in the first place. This big circle. I need money. I offer negative interest rates. I give you the money, and then you come back and you borrow more with the money I gave you or with the loan money. And it does do that. You know, I give you $100 million. You buy one of my bonds, and you take the $100 million. You come back, you buy another one. So you get the same amount of money bidding up the same, you know, collateral on multiple $100 million loans. So it is interesting. Healthy? Well, that remains to be seen, but it is interesting. So we'll keep an eye on the Dow this hour for you. It has been rather volatile in the markets, and as we mentioned before, cash, because it has a face value printed on it, we call that a face value or a nominal value. If you put cash in a brokerage account or cash in a stock account, it doesn't, the face value, the balance doesn't move up or down. So it was common sense to know that if you hold all cash, you're really not susceptible to a movement in stocks. And so if you wanted to be less susceptible to movements in the markets, you would hold more cash. That means if the market goes up, you don't make anything. But if the market goes down, you don't lose anything. Cash is cash. Put $100,000 in cash and put it in your bank, and if the market goes up or down, you still have $100,000. So cash is beneficial when the market drops, obviously, because you don't lose anything. And cash is not so beneficial when the market rises because you don't make anything. So there's a balance there. Diversification, I guess, would be the key. You know, I don't know if I would hold everything in cash, and I don't know if I would hold everything in stocks, but there are people that do both. So there you go. So we are talking about inflation. I mean, we've expected inflation for years because of all this money that's been printed, but we haven't seen it in many things. Case in point, just look at the price of gasoline. Gasoline is down from where it was 5 or 6, 7 years ago. And so we've seen actual no inflation in gasoline, actually deflation. Now, one of the reasons we haven't seen inflation, one of the reasons is because the money that has been created that goes into the banking system, a lot of that money is not being loaned out. It's being parked right back at the Federal Reserve. So the Federal Reserve gives the banks money for some collateral that they may have, like home mortgages or treasuries. and the money goes to the bank, and the banks may not want to lend it out or may not lend a lot of it out because they perceive risk in people like you and I. So they give it back to the same institution that gave it to them. They give it back to the Federal Reserve, and the Federal Reserve does pay them interest on it. So the more money the feds give the banking system, if they want, they can give money right back to the Federal Reserve, and the Federal Reserve will pay them. So sounds like a pretty sweet deal. I'm a bank, and I go to the Federal Reserve. Give me $10 billion. They give you $10 billion, and I turn around and give it right back to the Federal Reserve again, and then they pay me interest on the $10 billion that they originally gave me that I gave back. So it's kind of crazy. And there are many, many analysts that says that this is not healthy. Does it sound healthy to you? Does that sound like a healthy, logical way a monetary system should work? Questions, questions. So what is inflation? Well, we all know inflation. There are many definitions of it. Technical definition is an increase in the money supply. But most people would say that it's an increase in prices. But inflation does something very interesting, and it does something very interesting in a very clandestine way. It's almost like a drug. Inflation causes downward class mobility in almost every income strata. The more inflation we see, most income classes drop. So you'll see the upper class drop in the middle class, and the middle class drop in the lower class, and so on and so forth. But inflation actually enhances some people very nicely. The majority of people out there probably listening do not comprehend how inflation does this. How does inflation move classes down, except for the super rich, which it actually moves up? Inflation has been called the stealth tax, as inflation itself lulls to sleep and hides itself to the very people it damages the most. Now listen very carefully. Inflation has different official descriptions, as I mentioned, but let's just say it's rising prices. Let's just say that. Inflation is a general price increase over time in most all things that we buy, such as food, energy, services, and just about everything else people spend their money on. Inflation also causes your income, your wages, to rise. I think we could safely say that the United States, and indeed most of the planet, civilized worlds, have seen steadily increasing prices of most everything, only interrupted by occasional fall in certain items, such as gas. These rare falls, or these one-off-the-cuff falls of certain items, can be caused by temporary supply gluts or other reasons. But the general direction, I think most people would agree, of prices is, over the years, up. Most of you out there have accepted inflation as a fact of life. But it's only because you and I live now. There have been prolonged periods of time where inflation was non-existent for decades in just about every country one might look at. There are some that argue that during these times, a country sees no inflation as the most prosperous. Just how inflation does its dirty work, yet masks its dirty work in a feel-good sort of way to the people it affects, is truly an economic marvel. Inflation feels good as it increases your income. Your house prices rise. Your stock values go up. And it even brings more people into your place of business. It all sounds wonderful. After all, you make more money, you sell more stuff, and your assets go up in value. What's not to like? Well, the economic truth is inflation slowly erodes your net worth. It erodes your paycheck by decreasing what you can buy with it. And most importantly, persistently drops consumers into lower and lower income classes. It accomplishes this task by adhering to its one economic truth. Although everything does go up in price, including your income. The one economic fact is that wages, your income, always lag behind the general increase in prices of everything you buy. That is the one fact that causes this otherwise feel-good phenomenon to stealthily destroy all who live within its grasp. It appears you are getting ahead, but in actuality, the opposite is happening. An example would be to imagine a 2% inflation rate, where everything you buy goes up 2% a year. And indeed, the Federal Reserve has said that they want, that they target, that they will use the tools at their disposal to accomplish a 2% inflation rate. Your house will go up by 2%, and everything you own will rise in value by 2%, and your business will even sell more, 2% more. But because your wages, your income, your profit lag behind everything else, you are slowly falling behind. Remember, everything might go up by 2%, but your wages go up by 2%, but they don't. They go up by 2%, but they go up by 2% maybe later, a little bit later. That's what we mean by lagging. True, you make more money and you sell more stuff, which is the feel-good part. You look at your income and say, honey, I got a raise and we're selling more in the store. But your wage increase, which few people really measure against their household expenses, nobody really ever does that. Your wage increases does not match the increase of the things you buy. I use the analogy, it's like running a race where you might run 5 miles per hour, which is your wages, but your opponent runs 10. That's the general price levels. Although you think you're getting somewhere because you are moving ahead, the longer you run the race, the further behind you get. That the Federal Reserve, hence the government, and most of the central banks of the world support this policy. And they have stated so in their minutes of their specific or particular central reserve banks. It begs the question, why would they support a class-destroying policy? Well, as the prices of things rise in an inflationary scenario, most income classes see their purchasing power decline because your wages don't go up as much. So if the things you buy go up and your wages don't go up as much, it takes more of your money to buy the things you need. If it takes more of your money to buy the same amount of the things you need that you bought last year, your standard of living actually drops. But this does not apply to the wealthy. First of all, the very wealthy can afford higher prices as they make so much. Who cares if their food bills or other bills climb a few hundred dollars or even a few thousand? This is pocket change to the very wealthy. They don't care. They can afford to pay $10 a gallon in gas. While the low and middle income classes struggle with day-to-day living expenses and are forced to either cut back on what they buy or make more money to keep up, the very wealthy, who own many assets, see their wealth increase. The super rich own stocks, real estate. Indeed, they own entire conglomerate corporations. And I'm not talking about those local mom and pop stores on your local street corner. The super rich own companies such as the huge companies you buy most of your goods and services from. As inflation increases the prices of all things, the value of stocks, real estate, and companies goes up in price as well. If a low-income person sees a 2% inflation rate, they must cut back or earn 2% more just to tread water. But if a wealthy individual, let's say, owns a $100 million company, or a $100 million piece of real estate, and that climbs by 2% because of inflation, because everything climbs in price together, they see an increase in their wealth of 2% of $100 million or $2 million. If you increase the rate of inflation higher, or you own more than $100 million worth of stuff, your profits only grow from there. The equation is a simple one. Owning massive amounts of assets or multiple assets not only protects you against inflation, it increases your wealth at the same time. The more you own, the more you make. If you don't own anything, the more you lose. The higher the inflation rate, the higher the wealth goes for the super rich. Simply put, the leverage the super rich have by owning large value assets makes inflation one of their best friends, while the rest of the populace winces under the higher prices of the things they must buy to survive. It's the very reason we see investors like Warren Buffett, Carl Icahn, and among the many other high wealth individuals owning buildings, entire companies, buying entire companies. If they see inflation on the horizon, or they know inflation will be government policy, and it is because they have stated so, they only stand to gain from this policy. Now, even those that may not qualify as super rich, but if you own significant amounts of wealth in the form of real estates like stocks, real estate, or other assets, you'll survive and you'll probably even prosper from higher inflation rate. The problem here is the majority of consumers fall into the lower and middle income classes, the ones that suffer from inflation. This means as inflation progresses, most income classes fall further and further behind as those in the upper tiers amass even more wealth. It's the main reason. The rich are getting richer and the poor are getting poorer. Don't you hear that? 1%ers or 2%ers or the 99%ers. More of the wealth is being concentrated at a smaller and smaller level at the top. Because as inflation increases, they make even more and by a lot. This concentration of wealth in the upper income classes is inflation working its magic, or it's nightmare, depending on where you stand in the income strata. This could be a good thing if you own a lot of assets and are a multimillionaire, but for most people, it's very, very bad. That the Federal Reserve targets inflation at a 2% inflation rate, which is what they state in the Federal Reserve minutes. You have to wonder just whose side they are on. Inflation benefits one other entity, and we'll cover that when we return. You're listening to Money Matters on your community radio station. My name's Mark Cuniberti.
Let me tell you how it will be. There's one for you.
And you're tuned to Money Matters on your community radio station. Thanks for joining me. And you can always send comments, requests, or questions on the show to the program director at this station. So, and we welcome your comments, and they will forward them on to me. So we were speaking about inflation, and the main thing that you must grasp from this is, why does inflation hurt you when you actually think it does you good? Because in a very high inflationary environment, that's not too high, but high, you'll be sitting in the catbird seat, or at least you will think so. People will be out in restaurants, will be buying more stuff in your store, and you'll get wage increases. So everything looks rosy. But if you were to track what you buy month to month, every month, how much you spend on food, how much you spend on gas, and how much you spend on doctors and education and massages or whatever you do, and you continually track that, and you graph it, you'll graph your wages will go up, and you'll graph your spending will go up, and as long as you continue to buy the same things every month, you will eventually see that the things, the money you spend, goes up faster than your wages. That's the hook. And what it does is it causes more people to go broke, and it causes more people to need public assistance, which is why we see public assistance levels, you know, increasing. Food stamps, SNAP cards, free PG&E bill, just everything, mortgage help, it's all the stuff that they give away. Because as more people fall down, certain people fall under. And then big voices come out saying, you know, we're not being able to make it, we need more government assistance, and so the government comes out with more government assistance. And to do that, they have to create more money or borrow more money, which puts more money into the system. And the more money you have into the system, the higher inflation goes. So some of the obvious symptoms are an increasing minimum wage. I mean, when I was working at Jack in the Box, my minimum wage was $2.65 an hour, and they keep raising minimum wage. And I will tell you, they will have to keep raising minimum wage, because when you raise minimum wage and increase cost to business, they pass that cost on in higher prices, which is inflation. And since inflation destroys income classes and pops them down a lower level, more people need assistance. And then the government will come out and they will develop more social programs, give away more money, and they will raise the minimum wage again, and then their cycle repeats. So they keep trying to play catch up by spending more and more money, and the more money they spend, the more inflation you see. And the more inflation you see, the more people eventually need assistance. So it's this vicious circle. So you could raise minimum wage to $100 an hour. And for a while, it'd feel great if you were a wage earner. If you were a business, you'd be going, ouch. And you'd pass the prices on to your customers, and it would be a big circle again. So if you raise $100 an hour, well, come a time you're going to have to raise it $150 an hour. You know, in my opinion, minimum wage increases just foster the very thing that's requiring you to get a higher minimum wage. See, this is a vicious circle, but it's so stealthy. It's so clandestine. It's so complicated the way it does this, is most people don't understand. They just see the symptom. And the symptom is more people going broke. And so they call for more assistance. And they call for more assistance, and the government prints up more money and buys more inflation, then you got to need more assistance. But meanwhile, the people that are doing this and the people they are connected with, that upper middle class, love it. They absolutely love it when you say you need more assistance. Because remember what I said, the more inflation we make by printing more money, the wealthier they get. It's why you will never hear anything but. They all want you to cry for more, because they know. If I'm worth $1 billion and you give me 2% inflation, guess what? What's that? 20 million that I make? That puts more people under, except me. I make even more. And then you call for more, and I say, sure, we're compassionate. We'll help you. Because I make even more. And it's the reason you see the 1%ers concentrated. Pretty soon it's going to be the half percenters. So you have to realize that. Now, outside of that, you know, outside of the fact that they're all kind of in this super wealthy yacht together, okay, and they all benefit from this, the people in power, the last final entity to benefit inflation from inflation is the government themselves, or the governments of the world. Now, how do they benefit from inflation? Well, first of all, inflation doesn't cost them anything because they can just borrow more or print more. So they really don't care. You want more money? Want more social programs? Want more stimulus? No problem. We'll just print it up. The government loves inflation because, one, it makes you feel better. More people buy your stuff, your wages go up, and more people are out to eat. So it looks better. You know, a year from now, 2 years from now, you'd be scratching your head saying, well, why am I not able to buy what I was able to buy last year? But you won't make the correlation. They know that. You don't understand the correlation between inflation and why you can't make ends meet. So they love inflation because you love it. You get sick later, but you don't know why. You don't know what grimy handrail you touch to pick up that germ to make you sick. You'll never make the correlation. So they love inflation because you love it. And it enables them to give you all the things that you want. Now, they also love it for another reason. First of all, understand that most inflation is caused by monetary inflation, which means increasing the money supply. So the massive amount of money that the government can create can be by far the heaviest hand in fostering inflation. And remember, the feds have said, we want inflation. Duh. They prefer inflation. They've stated it. It's not my making it up. They just say, watch when the Federal Reserve comes out next week, they're going to say they want a 2% inflation rate. If the government is successful at causing inflation, and they have all the tools to cause as much inflation as they want, many things happen. Most of them bad for you later, not initially. And most of the good things happen to them. The policies that they can use, the gears, the levers, the engines they can use to foster inflation is quantitative easing, super low interest rates, and stimulus, all of which are inflationary. By setting interest rates low, first of all, the government is able to finance more debt, right? The government owes more money than anyone. Official figures, $19 trillion. Unofficial liabilities and promises to pay $150 billion out from Martin Weiss's website. If you lower interest rates, you can borrow money cheaper. The interest you pay on what you owe is cheaper, the $19 trillion. And you can borrow more money because you can afford to borrow more money, especially if you can pay the interest with more printed money, causing more inflation. They can also implement quantitative easing, QE. QE is a little bit more complicated. The government takes money, and they go to the banking system and they buy things from them like mortgages, or they buy things from them like their own debt. They go to the bank and they say, sell us back our own IOUs. Anytime they buy mortgages or they buy their own IOUs from the bank, they give the banks money, and the banks now have money, and they put that money in the system by either lending it out or they go buy more debt with it. They go back again. But all in all, it increases the amount of money in the circulation, which causes more inflation. Remember our little equation. More money in the system causes more inflation. Their third tool is stimulus, social programs, all the things they give you, infrastructure projects. When they spend money on these things, prescription drug benefit, whatever they do, they put more money into the system, causing even more inflation. Now, when they cause inflation, it causes wages to rise. But remember, wages don't rise as fast as the things you buy. When wages rise, more income taxes are collected. Eh? Did you think of that one? And when wages rise, you go into higher tax brackets. So you pay more, percentage-wise. That increases the revenue to them again. The caveat here is you got to remember, although you make more money, the prices of everything you buy go up a little bit faster, but now you're in a higher tax bracket to boot. So you actually get double whammied. It'd be one thing if you didn't go in a higher tax bracket or you didn't pay more taxes on the money, but you do the more you make, whether it's from inflation or you just working more hours, the more taxes you pay. So the longer they do this, the more people go into higher income taxes, or the more income you make, the more taxes you pay. So they get more revenue. Finally, by causing inflation, the Fed's what we call weaken the U.S. dollar. When you cause inflation, your currency, quote, weakens relative to other currencies. That's a little more tricky to understand. But it's the reason why big corporations want inflation. They want a weak dollar because it makes their exports, what they sell to other countries, cost less. So if we get inflation, the U.S. dollar weakens, our corporations sell more overseas, and they themselves pay what? Higher taxes. That brings in more money to dear Uncle Sam. It is also said that inflation punishes savers through loss of purchasing power, right? And it rewards borrowers because borrowers will be able to pay back their debts with cheaper dollars. So, well, who owes a lot of money? Well, the U.S. government. They're the biggest borrower on the planet. So they get to pay their debts back with cheaper dollars. And the lower interest rates means they can pay less interest and they can borrow more. So it all works in their favor. As the largest borrower in the world, it's not hard to see the incentive to foster inflation over stable prices by the U.S. government. Couple all this together, the fact that revenues to the government increases with higher taxation on inflated sales and wages, their ability to sell more debt and finance that debt at a lower cost, and at the same time make you happy with more spending and more free stuff. It's easy to see why the government prefers inflation over any other monetary environment. The bad news here reverts back to when we began the whole show. The fact that inflation hurts all classes but the wealthy. While that minuscule group profit handsomely from inflation, all the other income levels beneath them slowly fall. And they call for more inflationary programs. It's a beautiful thing. You gotta appreciate a good con. I used to say that years ago. You gotta appreciate a good con. Inflation, it's the feel-good elixir. It's so seductive. It's like heroin or cocaine. Feels great, but does so much damage. You're listening to Money Matters. We'll be right back.
Let's carry off my mouth. money than you have ever seen. Maybe I just want all the friends. I'm gonna insulate my body in cream. I'm gonna light my cigarettes with $100 bills. Ow!
And that concludes another edition of our Economic Forum Money Matters. This has been show, what has this been, show 237? Inflation? I think so. My name is Mark Cunaberti on your community radio station. Thank you for joining me. And now, please remember that discussions in this show should not be construed as individual investment advice or specific recommendations. Always consult with your investment professional before making important investment decisions. I am an investment advisor representative through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. The views expressed are my opinions only and the opinions of articles or guests that I may read or have on the air. They do not necessarily reflect those of this station, Cambridge, its staff, members, or underwriters. Have a great day.
This has been another edition of Money Matters. Please be advised that the views and opinions expressed on this show are those of myself and my guests, and are opinions only, and may not represent those of this station, its staff, members, or underwriters. This show is not meant as investment advice. Consult a qualified financial advisor before making any investment decisions, and do your own research before investing. The information given on this show was obtained from a variety of public sources and is deemed accurate at time of airing, but is not guaranteed. This show was pre-recorded at an earlier date, so the market indices and related stock market references may not be accurate at the time of airing. You can order past shows or comment on our show by sending me an email at mark@moneymanagementradio.com. Money Matters is produced and recorded at the studios of KVMR FM 89.5 in Nevada City, California. You can visit our website at moneymanagementradio.com. Thanks for listening.